Let's see how it goes. So, I would like to give a brief introduction to thermal field theory in the next 2 weeks, this week and next week. Okay, so I know this title might be scary, but don't be scared, because I will only touch the most basic things. So I wouldn't stick to the details, the technicality aspect. I will try to be very heuristic and just mostly say discuss the physical pictures and what possibly we can do with some simple things. Okay, so thermal field theory is the reason why I chose this is partially because Frankfurt, this institute, is a center in the world for heavy ion collisions. So that is, maybe you have heard RIG, the accelerator in the in Long Island, relativistic heavy ion collider, and the LHC at CERN. So they are also doing colliding heavy nuclei, not just particle physics, but also colliding like protons, or even bigger heavy nuclei. And then the purpose of this is trying to create a new state of matter, which is called the quark gluon plasma. And so, from the name, we already know that quark gluon. So the underlying theory for studying this is quantum chromodynamics, QCD. And thermal field theory, or their thermal QCD, or finite temperature QCD, is just the underlying, let's say, field theory for studying this. Therefore, because of also the specialty here, I would like to just briefly introduce some basics for this. And so maybe first I give a bunch of references in case you are interested in some of the things I'm going to mention, and then you can check. Okay, first, so references. Okay, first, books. The first one is the French book. No, the book written by French. Labalik. It's just thermal field theory. So it's Cambridge University Press, 1996. Okay, so this is really a quite very clean and heuristic book. It doesn't contain many stuffs, but for the things it has, it really explains everything in quite a heuristic and relatively understandable level. But it has somehow its own notation system, therefore one should get used to that first, and then it's a bit different than the ones normally we use. Okay, and then there is a much more extensive book. It's by, so this is the first one, and then Kapusta. Kapusta and Gale. So it's called finite temperature field theorem. Okay, I just use abbreviations.
So this is the only finite temperature book I ever had in my hand, but it seemed quite thin and small when you say it's much more expensive.
This one, okay, that's the first version by Kapusta. That's from 89 or 80 something. So this is the second edition, which is nearly twice or even more. Finite temperature field theory, and so it's also Cambridge. It's also Cambridge University Press. Yeah, this is 2006. But of course, the I would say it touches many topics. So one can get some ideas about what we can do with thermal field theory. But the technical methods, especially the technical methods they use in the book, are relatively old. So sometimes it's maybe not so efficient to use those techniques because some of them are really developed in the 80s. And now we have more efficient methods. Okay, so these are really the two good books, but you see even the, well, this is a rewritten, this is the second edition, but they are relatively old still, so. And then a few reviews, good reviews, review articles. Okay, the first one is written by Blazot and Yang Ku. So the title is "The Quark Gluon Plasma, the QGT." Okay. If dynamics and hard thermal. This is actually the first review I can find on the thermal field theory topic. So it's a physics report paper review. Physics report volume page 2. So it's from 2002. This is the first review I know that on this topic. And so it touches already more sophisticated stuff like collective modes, collective dynamics, and the very important concept of hard thermal loops. So this is, I will go in detail about what hard thermal loop means in the next lecture. And so this is available through the archive. And then the next one. Is by Kramer and Repan. Okay. it's the name is Advan. This in perturbative thermal field theory. So this is nearly a book, a thin book. And personally, I like this quite a lot because it's very concise. It doesn't give you many technical details, but it touches to the physical meaning of each thing. Okay. This is in the report of progress in physics. So all of them are available through the archive. So and then the next one and the last review is by Anderson. And Strickland. So it's called resummation in hot field theories. So this one already goes one step further than those general discussions. So this one touches a very important concept, which is resummation in thermal field theory. So this is so in order to do thermal field calculation, in order to analyze thermal field dynamics, resummation is needed nearly in anywhere. So for example, this hot thermal loop is just the most important resummation. That's why, so this is already quite a specialized review. And so this is in Annals of Physics. Okay, so you see, even this one is from 10 years ago. Sorry, I forgot the archive number in my note, but I can give you in case you are interested, or just search this name. Thanks. Okay, and then, so I would like to also give you some more recent developments which are available through the following two PhD theses. The first one is from Harman Waringer. So he was a Humboldt Fellow with Dirk Rischke a few years ago here. Thermodynamics of QCD inspired. So it's called Thermodynamics of QCD Inspired Theories. And it it gives some tricks about how to do thermal field calculations. So this is quite practical in case, I mean, one is interested in going further along this direction, like how to do integrals, how to do contour, this kind of thing.
PH
0404164164. Thanks. Hep pH. Yes. Thermodynamics of so this one is also Hep pH 0604105. Okay, and then the final one is my PhD thesis. Gauge invariant. A gauge invariant reorganization of thermal gauge theory. So it's from 2011 on the archive. So okay, so those are the references, and so I will mostly stick to the tricks and the logics of these two PhD theses, and also partially referring to this one. And for the book, I recommend this. Sometimes maybe I also follow the logic of the book. Yeah, all right. Okay, so let's start the introduction. So since I will try to discuss everything in a very heuristic level, therefore, in case you have some just naive or whatever things in mind, just stop me and ask. And okay, thermal field theory. The first question I want to address, I want to raise is, so what is it? What is thermal field theory? So, in a very naive term, thermal field theory is just quantum field theory, which you have been studying together with statistical physics. Just combine these two things together, and then we get thermal field theory, roughly speaking. So, and then some comments. Okay, so in quantum field theory, I mean, we start with particle system, single particle, and then a few particle collision, and so on. So those are all, say, those problems are all field body system problems. So we mostly or we nearly only stick to the quantum effects, to study the quantum effects like collision and so on, radiation. But for a more realistic system, like gas, like liquid, we know that's a many-body system. So we have many particles, like condensed matter, for example. So we have not just quantum effects. But also statistical effects. So thermal field theory is just the tool to study a many-body system. So combining these two things together. So sometimes it's also referred to like many-body quantum field theory, finite temperature quantum field theory, statistical field theory. So well, actually here already I touched my second question, which is, okay, so here I would like to just mention a few systems, popular systems, what normally we use thermal field theory to analyze. Okay, what it studies. Okay, in general, so it studies many-body system. Many-body systems at finite temperature and or finite density. So normally, so okay. This is temperature. This is chemical potential, and we use that to measure density in the system or chemical potential. Therefore, it has close relation with statistical mechanics. And okay, so now a few physical systems. So first, as I mentioned just now, that the quark gluon plasma, that's a hot topic in high energy physics. Hot quark gluon. So, and it's a many body quark and gluon system, relativistic system. It's very hot, so mostly we are interested in the temperature profiles or properties of these. Of course, the new experiments that are going to start at FAIR will focus also on the density aspect, finite density aspect. Therefore, it's very exciting topic. And then the next is the physics of compact stars. Okay, so we know, I mean, in astrophysics, and then the compact stars are a crucial object for studying. And many of them are made just by neutrons, so they are called the neutron star. And of course, I mean, people also believe that there should be maybe also stars formed purely by quarks, the so-called quark star. And maybe by the mixture between neutrons and quarks, so they are called the hybrid star. And some more fancy star like the magnetar, which means, okay, I mean, it's not just by neutrons or quarks, but also, I mean, this star has a intrinsic, very strong electromagnetic field associated with it. Okay, so those systems are highly dense systems. So very low temperature, nearly zero temperature, but highly dense. So we are mostly interested in studying the density property of those systems with thermal field theory. Of course, don't be confused with the name thermal field theory about this nearly zero temperature system. So that's why sometimes I would like to just address the general name as many-body quantum field theory. It sounds more general than thermal field theory or finite temperature field theory. Okay, and then condensed matter system. For example, there is a big branch of condensed matter system called the cold atoms. So this is okay, those two are mostly relativistic systems, but this one is non-relativistic. So people are really doing experiments, low temperature experiments, trying to cool the atoms down and then applying potential through, for example, Feshbach resonance, just applying magnetic field to tune the interaction between the cold atoms to let them undergo, for example, superfluidity, superconductivity, all these fancy phase. So this is a very branch in physics. It's not high energy, it's very low energy. And there we also need the thermal field theory, or normally in this area, people refer to the name as statistical field theory. And yes, so.
Before you go on, I have a question.
Yes, please.
When you are coming to this, I understand when the temperature and the chemical potential is non-zero, I need statistical physics.
Yes.
But do I need always quantum physics to describe a quark gluon plasma? I mean, for example, when we study many photons or so,
yes,
the field theory at, for example, finer temperature sufficient?
Yes. Excellent question. Okay. okay, first, I use this to motivate the cold atoms. For example, we can ask the same question that whether we need the quantum part to study cold atom systems in order to get, for example, superfluidity, superconductivity. And then only statistical physics is not enough in order to get all these pairing, for example, Cooper pair, that's purely quantum effects because, I mean, electron, when it spin up, when it spin down, and then they can pair up if the energy is favored. So
but
this is,
atoms yeah, sound
sure.
Like being in a ground state or in a
yes,
ground
and
state.
For quark gluon plasma, the quark gluon plasma is already, so this is the product of a Young Mills QCD. Okay, QCD, first of all, QCD is a non-abelian gauge theory. So non-abelian gauge theory, the property of this, like non-commutative algebra, this kind of thing, is already purely a quantum thing. That's why the quark gluon plasma is actually a pure quantum state of matter. Of course, for some of its properties, For example, the equation of state, one can try to use classical modeling, like quasi-particle modeling, try to get it down. But the thing is, if we want to get every perspective of this matter, say correct, and then classical modeling doesn't work. Say, for example, we can use classical modeling to get to fit the, for example, the pressure or energy density of the quark gluon plasma. And then we say, okay, that's our model. We try to calculate the dynamics with this model. And then we find out, okay, they are wrong. They are not compatible with experiments. Therefore, quark gluon plasma is purely, I mean, in my opinion, it's purely a quantum state of matter. Yeah. So using classical modeling can only say doing some single perspective of it. But if we want to understand this whole thing self-consistently and systematically, and then we do really need quantum physics. And I guess also that's why lattice gauge theory is so powerful. Okay. Okay, and then let's do some cleaning. Oh yeah. And then we will start some basis. Okay, now let's go and see some formula, simple ones. So the basis is about the link between quantum physics and the statistical physics. So how we link these two things together and then generalize to many-body quantum field theory or thermal field theory. Just some brief idea about how to link these two things. Okay. So it's a link between statistical physics and quantum physics. So since we are dealing with a many particle system, and also in thermal field theory, okay, let's assume also that we are mostly dealing with relativistic systems. So we're at high energy, not really low energy. Therefore, the statistical physics, the statistical ensemble we are interested in is the grand canonical ensemble, which can freely exchange particles and also energy with the outside. So, grand canonical So the most important quantity there is the partition function. So basically, it's just counting of states. So the partition function is the sum of the energy, yeah, of from all the states. So it tells the probability basically. And so here, EI means just energy for each state. Okay, and then we put them together. This is just some brief general review about the knowledge you already have. And then of course we can insert the state wave vectors. I always forget how to call those. We can just insert the states. Writing the thing in the compact form. And here, now, we see the appearance of the Hamiltonian of the system. So the Hamiltonian contains all the information of the system. Okay. And then, of course, mathematically, this is just equivalent as taking the trace of this, since Hamiltonian is an operator acting on those states. So it's just taking the trace of the wonderful. Okay, so this is the most important thing, actually, yeah. So thermal field theory is really not as horrible as it sounds. Okay, and then if we have the partition function, just from thermodynamical relations, we get all the thermodynamical observables like pressure, energy, particle density, and so on. Okay, here we assume, okay, we are only interested in the finite temperature properties of the system. We put the density, the chemical potential to zero just for simplicity, because that is just some technical subtleties. We are not interested in stimulating the general discussion. Okay. Otherwise, there will be one more term minus mu and the particle density here. But let's forget about that. Okay. So.
I'm a bit confused.
In yes.
In the sum of all states of the quantum field theory.
So no. This is there is no quantum yet. This is statistical physics.
All classical states.
Yes.
But since it's...
Or just states.
I mean, I'm confused because you're saying it's a grand canonical partition function. This is... You don't have a particle number in the chemical potential now in your equations.
Well, because, of course, there is such a term. But that is associated with the density. I put the density to zero.
That
is not part of the Hamiltonian. That is part of the system. That is part of the partition function. So the partition function, okay. So the general form of the partition function is in this way, we have both temperature and density. And then, of course, we just put these to zero for simplicity. That's why. And also, in the action of this system, the density is an extra quadratic term. And the Hamiltonian or the Lagrangian, that is from, okay, let's say, in the quadratic action, the quadratic part of the action, so the kinetic terms, they contribute to this. And then the density profile is an extra. Yeah. Yes?
So in our limit, if the density is zero, we have just the
Sorry?
We have just a canonical and not a grand canonical.
In which limit? Sorry?
If we let the density go to zero and just have the sum over all states.
Yes. Yeah. And but of course, I mean, this is just a general thing. We just let everything possible. We can exchange particles with the outside if there is such a possibility. Yeah. Okay, and then just some thermodynamical relations, like how to get, for example, the pressure. From the pressure is determined from the partition function by the volume derivative, and then the entropy by the temperature derivative. Well, so basically just taking derivatives of the partition function with respect to different parameter, and then we get different thermodynamical quantities. And the energy density is just combination of course, I'm here in case we have finite density. Yes. Therefore, if we know the partition function, basically we know all the thermodynamics of the system. And in this lecture, I will just stick to the static thermodynamics of every case. Okay, so this is the statistical physics part. And now let's see the quantum field theory part. How to link, okay, since now we have the partition function. So the partition function is a sum of an exponential. And also here, we also see the appearance of Hamiltonian. So basically, the information of the system appearing in the argument of the Hamiltonian. Therefore, people back to the days during the initial stage of thermal field theory, people just thought, OK, because in quantum field theory, we know the path integral formalism, it has very similar, say, structure. It has an exponential. And then, okay, instead of a summation, it has an integral. But we know, I mean, summation, integral, these two things, sometimes we can try to just switch between these two things. And in the exponential of the path integral, so we also have not Hamiltonian, but Lagrangian, but also Hamiltonian, Lagrangian, they are just linked by Lagrangian transformation. So they basically, we have the information of the system. That's why people just thought, okay, whether, I mean, since these two things look so similar, whether we can link these two things together. Yes, that's the idea, the initial idea for thermal field or statistical field theory. Okay, how to do that? Again. So, the partition function is the trace. Okay, this is in the grand quantum mechanical, grand canonical ensemble. In field theory, in the path integral formalism of field theory, okay, now we have fields instead of particles. Exponential. I will explain everything after I write down this formula. Okay, so this is the path integral expression, basically. And the trick how to, I mean, link the statistical physics part, and the path integral part is actually here. So we just need to identify, okay, first the time in the real. So first, okay, we see this is minus. Now we have a minus instead of an I. So normally in path integral, we have an I, right? In Minkowski space, there is an I. But here now we do this following identification. So we substitute t to I tau. So now basically this is a weak rotation. So, so after the weak rotation, of course, we are in Euclidean space. And then we get the Euclidean time tau. So, and then the Euclidean time has a limited range. It's not like a real time. It can be from 0 to infinity or minus infinity to infinity, depends on how you wish. But because of actually the property of the trace, people realized the Euclidean time actually runs in a compact circle. And the boundary conditions are if the field is bosonic, and then the boundary condition is so this is for, so it's periodic boundary condition. So starting point and the ending point, they are the same. Okay. For fermions, it's anti-periodic, also because of when we take the trace, and then there will be an extra minus. Okay, so basically this is our thermal field theory partition function. And then for whatever we are going.
For,
I think because of Grassmann variable and because of the trace property, okay, we can roughly speaking, so when we switch the order and then for fermions we get an extra minus, but for bosons we don't, and for getting this boundary condition, and then we have to also write out the evolution exponentials and then regrouping them in order to make the like the different say initial and ending time. So it's a very tricky, actually it's quite a tricky thing. And because of Grassmann variable property, there is, yeah. But it's not trivial.
But it's very important. I just can give a warning to you. Yeah. I did research on finite temperature, I didn't know this, and I used periodic boundary conditions for the Crossen-Hill model, and I got with my method wrong results for a couple of weeks.
Yes.
Until I discussed with a friend who was working on this, and I said, not finding a correct answer. He mentioned this, and everything was fine.
So yes, exactly. This is a very tricky thing. Fundamental tricky. But tricky. And fermions always introduce extra problems. Actually, in our research as well, normally people think, okay, quarks, I mean, all the problems should come from the gauge bosons, gluons, because of maybe you heard confinement, asymptotic freedom. Quarks, they are the same as electrons. But in reality, it's they are just not as neat as electrons. And whenever quarks enter the game, we always see dirty structures unexpectedly. That's why, yeah, fermions are not a piece of cake. Okay. Yes, so basically, this is the main ingredient we are going to use for the rest of the lecture, just the partition function. But of course, I mean, this is a very abstract subject, and I will just go step by step to see, to show, okay, how we can possibly massage it, and for each system, and what and the actual ingredients we need for certain calculations, okay? Okay, and then let's see, okay, the QED case of the partition function. Okay, sorry. Finite temperature QED. This is actually also just a reminder of what we have learned before about QED. So, we know, okay, the QED Lagrangian is so this is the original QED Lagrangian. And now we take even a more general case. We put a mass for the electron. And normally in the calculation, we put the mass to zero for simplicity. But anyway, this is just to remind ourselves how it looks. OK, but since QED is a gauge theory, therefore we cannot just do calculation with this bare Lagrangian because of the overcounting of gauge symmetry. So normally we have to do a gauge fixing. Of course, on the lattice, I mean, we can just put the whole thing on the lattice. But say if we do diagrammatic calculations, and then we have to choose a gauge, so the so-called gauge fixing procedure. And so, and then now we will get an extra piece in the Lagrangian, which is the gauge fixing part. And then associated with the gauge fixing part, we will get a ghost Lagrangian. Okay. That's, of course, I mean, if we want to be even more complete, and then when we do diagrammatic calculation, there will be also a counter term, QED counter term Lagrangian. And this collects all the counter terms from renormalization, which enables us to do systematic and self-consistent field theory calculation. Well, these are just formalities. Okay, so shall I write down the expression for each of them, or you think, I mean, you still remember all of them?
The last one
is just doesn't matter. The last one is something not relevant for the lecture. Okay, okay, and okay, and then the finite temperature, the partition function for QED is. So first we have the photon field, and then we have the electron, anti-electron, anti-electron, electron, Okay, and then we have the ghosts, 5 purple of ghosts, they are from here. These are all the fields for QED. So again, d tau d3x. Okay, we choose, I mean, our spatial dimension to be 3. So, yeah, this is just general formality. But of course, here, the next concept is something new. It's about, so we, in practice, for diagrammatic calculation, we always have to deal with integrals. For example, for such a loop integral. And the measure for the integral, okay, at zero temperature, we always have such measure for, yeah, since we have 4 space-time dimensions, so. But now, we have a compact dimension comparing to the zero temperature case. Therefore, the integration measure is slightly different, okay, because of this compactification. So, because, okay, roughly this goes like this. So this is in coordinate space. And then for the integrals we are going to do, normally they are in the momentum space. Therefore, there is a Fourier transform between these two spaces. So if the range of the original coordinate is infinite, and then the corresponding Fourier transform is also infinite, or is also an integral, but continuous thing. But since now we have a compact dimension, the Fourier transform is discrete. So it's, the Fourier transform is not a continuous integral, but a summation. So that is the so-called Masubar summation. So at finite temperature, so the time dimension becomes a summation in the energy momentum space. The remaining spatial momentum, they are the same. Okay, so now let's look at those omega a bit. So those omega are the moles after the Fourier transform. They are called the Masubar. Masubar. Modes. And again, because of the boundary condition, the different boundary conditions for fermions and bosons, we have different Masubar mode expression for fermions and bosons. So for bosons, they take the value 2 pi t times the relevant mode number n, and n, okay, here omega n from minus infinity to plus infinity, n takes all the integers. Okay, for fermions, for fermions, so there is an extra pi t. So it's 2n plus 1 pi t. OK.
Just as a comment, technically, this is exactly what we discussed when we did lattice QCD. The only difference was the discretization was in position space, not in momentum space.
Yeah.
And then we have either here an infinitely
many.
Finite
range. Yeah,
and
range.
And
yeah, yeah, yeah.
The lattice, it was a continuous and finite.
Yes, range. Yes. After a Fourier transform, it becomes infinite but discrete modes. This is exactly the correspondence. Yes, thanks. Okay, good. So far, so good. Okay, and then now we see the most actually important ingredient for doing a thermal field calculation. Now let's just try to do the simplest thermal field calculation to warm up a bit for the coming lectures. Okay. I may need to clean this. Oh, sorry, by the way. So there is a name for such a thing. So this is called a sum integral. So it's a summation together with an integral. So we invented a name for it for finite temperature field theory. So it's called sum integral. And now let's see some simple sum integrals. Okay. The first one. I have two examples, actually. They are the most, important and classic examples for thermal field theory. And nearly we need them for, most of the time. So first example, don't laugh, this maybe looks too simple. Ah, okay, sorry, another thing I forgot to mention. Okay, so this is the full expression for the sum integral, and then normally we use this as the short abbreviation. Yeah. Okay. This is the simplest sum integral. And it looks simple, but it's very powerful. And with it, we can already get a two-loop calculation done if we know the result. I will show you how. Okay. So since now we are in Euclidean space. We are in Euclidean space, and so the convention is now we have P naught and P vector, and this is omega n. basically. Zero component in the momentum, for momentum in Euclidean space, is the mass of our frequency. And so here, let's assume even further. So this guy is a boson, is bosonic. Okay, I write down the full. Okay, so this is the thing we want to calculate. So it contains a summation and then an integral over the momentum. Before going to the finite temperature calculation, so let's first analyze it at zero temperature. So zero temperature correspondence of this guy. Zero temperature correspondence is this one. Because from this calculation, I would like to show, okay, what is the difference between a finite temperature integral and a zero temperature integral for the same integral, for the same integrand. Zero temperature, we don't need to, there is no split between the moles, and so we just use the compact form. Okay, now first let's do some power counting to see how the integral should behave in the end, dimensionally, or the energy dimension or the mass dimension. Because, okay, apparently, I mean, there should be some divergence. Because of, I mean, this is p square, and here we integrate over four momentum. But of course, I mean, also from regularization, we know, okay, we can get a finite piece from such a thing. For example, using dimensional regularization. Okay, so so this integral behaves like this, roughly, d4p 1 over p square. And so get, so this is roughly how to do the counting. So we get a, this is, there are four p's, so three there. So basically, finally, this integral is proportional to the mass dimension of the integral. Yeah, it's momentum square. Okay. And now let's just calculate it very simply. So if we want to do the actual calculation, and then we have to be careful, because okay, the integrand, when p is zero, the integrand is divergent. Therefore, we should always keep in mind that we should put some infrared cutoff when doing the calculation. And after the calculation is done, of course, if we can do, if we do the renormalization correctly, and then the cutoff should be cancelled with through the regularization procedure. But always keep in mind that this integrand is infrared divergent. So and in dimensional regularization, this guy, okay, I wrote down too many steps in my note, actually. Now I'm just trying to think how to simplify it and stimulate the final discussion. I think, Mark, you also have a, in your lecture notes, I forgot in which page, you have a general formula for this integral, right? So have you done this before? Or roughly, I forgot in which page, you have a compact formula for this type of integral.
Yes.
Because when I made this example, I also checked your note to see whether you did something similar. I will just go through the main step. Okay, so in dimensional regularization, we make in dim rec. Dimensional regularization, this means, okay, we make the dimension fractional. We put normally. So, so depends on the convention. I mean, normally I prefer to use 2 epsilon, but in some books, people just use epsilon, but this is just a matter of convention. And of course, because of the modification in the dimension, and then we should put a prefactor to compensate. Because finally, I mean, the theory is living in 4 dimensions. If here we subtract a little bit, and then we should also put it back. And this is done through this prefactor. This is a Euler gamma function. And now we introduce an energy scale. This is called the renormalization scale. Okay, and just a factor. So epsilon. So in this way, it's compensated. And then, of course, just take the measure out, take the momentum P from here. I mean, there is a to here. And then this is just a simple, simple momentum integral. We can even do that, I mean, if you want to practice with your hands, and then you can use the property of, for example, of gamma functions to do it. Otherwise, Mathematica can also do it. Okay, so final result is so this is the final result. The notable thing here is there is a pole, 1/ε pole in this result. And of course, everything is proportional to momentum square. This is an energy scale. Okay. Now let's see the finite temperature case. How much space do I need? Okay, now let's do the finite temperature case. There are a few different ways to do this integral, and today I will stick to maybe a very simple trick. And well, one can use fancy tricks like contour integral, to dig out all the poles using residue theorem and so on. But today I will just use a very simple, straightforward way to do it. Okay, so again, we we first try to massage the summation. So in finite temperature calculation, there is a summation, and then there is an integral. So of course, I mean, in principle, these two, the orders of these two can be switched. But it turns out from practice that it's mostly simpler to first do the summation and then do the integral. I mean, the summation, of course, for those simple integrals, I mean, the summation can be done analytically. And then we are left with a single integral, momentum integral. It can be simple, it can be also complicated. I mean, the advantage of first doing the summation and then doing the integration is, even if the final integral is not possibly to be done analytically, we can just numerically solve them trivially, normally, because it's just an integral, normally. Okay. So we normally first do the summation and then do the integral. So the summation, I mean, for practical cases in thermodynamics, the summation can be done analytically, normally. And then, of course, I mean, the leftover is an integral. Say, in case, I mean, the integral is not, If it's simple, then we can also do that analytically. But if it is not so simple, we can always do that numerically, because it's an integral. But summation is much more tricky to do numerically, I guess. Yeah, so this is just some practical. For example, okay, here, I mean, this is completely analytic. We can do everything analytic. But say, if we have a mass here, and then the integral is not analytic anymore. So, but numerically that is trivial. Okay, so how to do the, so we observe that, okay, so since minus infinity to infinity, so the zero mass of our mode, that is something special in thermal field theory. First of all, when this is zero and then we only have a p square, of course, again, I mean, this is divergent. And here, for the zero mass of bar frequency, that will contribute to the so-called Debye screening. The other way around. Debye screening will contribute to that mode. Therefore, although it looks like here we have nothing, but actually, after we include statistical physics effect, for the zero mass bar mode, there will be a thermal mass. But we are not going to touch this subtlety. Just for today, I mean, the zero mass bar mode doesn't contribute. We leave that out as a special case. And also, in dimensional regularization, I mean, if here has nothing, if here has no infrared cutoff, and then for zero muscle bar mode, it's just 1 over p squared. And then this guy doesn't have a mass scale in there, doesn't have a bare mass scale after the momentum integration. So it's just a pure number. Therefore, in dimensional regularization, this is set to 0. This is some technicality. And for finite temperature, of course, I mean, the zero mode is very special, and we treat the zero modes separately. Therefore, here we just decouple the zero mode, and then we find out, okay, so the summation actually is symmetric in the positive and negative mode. Therefore, we can just do this. Okay, now let's use another variable, A. Okay, this is the first step. The next step is about how to do the summation, how to use the property of zeta, Riemann zeta function. Okay, first, zeta function. I write down the zeta function. So this is this way of rewriting the sum is just for later on we make use of the zeta function property. Okay. So this is Riemann zeta function. And in order to make use of that, we do the redefinition of the variables, okay, of the moment of the integration variable. So we substitute P as A times K. And then, of course, dP becomes A times dK. And then this guy yes, so in this way, we can single out all the A's and then make use of this formula. Okay, here, also because, again, this integral is apparently divergent. So we have to extract the finite piece through dimensional regularization. Therefore, I also make the dimension at the dimension 2 epsilon to the measure. Of course, I mean, by doing this, I should always say put this factor in order to make the full dimension still 4 dimension. Yeah. The compensation. Okay. S- So after some massage, so here we have to also take out oh, I forgot one measure, which is, okay, in this step, already I took the momentum out. And then here, there should be, after I decompose, I mean the three momentum, to in the polar coordinate, there is also this angle measure, theta and theta phi. Yeah, I forgot how to call that. And so the measure in, so this, so that is this guy. 2 pi d theta and d this guy. And this is 4 pi if we are in integer dimension. But of course, now we are in fractional dimension, and then the factor is, okay, first, from the integration measure, this is the one associated with this, 3 minus 2 epsilon, and then okay, when epsilon, when we take epsilon to be 0, and then this collapses to 4 pi. So this is the measure. I think you also have this, the general expression for this measure in your note. I remember I saw it. This is the sphere. You mean these two? Denominator. Oh, gamma. Oh, sorry. This is the gamma function. Gamma function. Actually, this is a spatial dimension d divided by 2. D divided by 2. Yeah, this is.
On a conference or something, Christoph Zieg.
I see.
But I vaguely remember.
Yeah, so this is the volume of the d sphere, d dimensional sphere, basically. Yeah. So otherwise, just ask me and I can find you. So don't worry about all the details here. So we have. Okay. So. And. And then. Let me just group all the things together here as well. Oh. Okay, so these, you can use the zeta function property, and this is just a simple integral. So finally, the result is, after we do everything, amazingly simple. There is no divergence. Yes?
Is it the counting of string theory? You use the sum of 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4?
Sorry, what do we mean by counting of string theory?
I know there's bosonic string theory. If you want to come to the result that you have to have 26 dimensions, that's the sum we have to.
You mean this Vannicciello algebra? You mean this? I think I know. No. This has not.
That's also 1/12.
Okay. No. This is just a simple integral. Okay. This is purely accidental. Purely accidental. Okay. This has nothing to do with string theory. This is just. It's just by accident. Okay. Of course. That is this Vannicciello algebra. I think what you meant by that. This counting. Weekly.
Calculating something which is infinite, right?
Yes.
And you get a finite result, and I guess you get the finite result because
yes.
The zeta function at probably negative integers
yep.
is not taken to be infinite, but probably minus.
Yes, in this sense, yes, yeah. Probably. In this sense, yes.
The point in string theory is that you can expand your zeta function around minus one.
Yeah.
And, well, then it exactly gives 1/12.
Yeah, in that sense. Okay, yeah, in that sense, very probably. Yes. Okay, and then yeah, maybe you can, in the future, make some use of this simple integral in string theory. It's possible. Actually, I mean, there are many seemingly close connection between field theory and the string theory. My master's thesis actually was about some similarities between anomalies in string theory and anomalies in field theory. And that was long time ago. And but somehow just there are so many similarities and people haven't explored much about those, field theory and string theory, maybe duality or whatever. Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks. Okay, so we see because of the now we have.
I'm sorry,
yes.
You are already 4 minutes over time.
Oh, all right. This is the end. Okay. Basically, this is the end. I prepared too much. It seems. This is. I just want to make a final comment that. In thermal field theory, we have a three-dimensional momentum integral. And at zero temperature, we have four-dimensional integral. Therefore, because we have one less dimension here, therefore, the result is more convergent than in the vacuum. So there we have a pole, remember. But now it's finite. So just, okay, the convergence is better at finite temperature. Yes, that's it for today. Thanks. And next time I will show you how to do contours for the same integral. And then with these two examples, we can already do a two-loop calculation for scalar field thermodynamical potential. Yeah, that will be the topics for Friday. Yeah, thanks.